Welcome to IT.
Hi everyone, welcome to IT. I am Niloufar Bineshwar and you are hearing us from sunny Miami during Vipaco Society's annual meeting. Today I am joined by Dr. Jay Schrader. Thank you for taking time to speak with me today, Dr. Schrader.
Absolutely, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. So my first question is that what are the most promising recent advancements at this meeting or otherwise that you are most excited about?
Yeah, I mean, it's always an exciting time to be a retina specialist. I think the big separation, right, is we're talking about medical retina and we're talking about surgical retina. I think from a medical retina perspective, I think the things that have been discussed at this meeting, other meetings, are treatments for geographic atrophy, dry AMD. It's been very exciting to have treatment FDA approved in the last year, year and a half, that we continue to learn more about. We have also more durable therapies for wet age-related macular degeneration, diabetic retinopathy, things like faricimab, high dose of aflibercept, and then other sort of pipeline drugs that are coming up. From a surgical perspective, I think it's just the more and more creative ways we see to fix long-term problems. We saw many ways, for example, for fixing chronic macular holes that don't close, for fixing optic pits that cause subretinal fluid detachment, or for dealing with situations with significant trauma or risk for proliferative retinopathy, and how people have creatively thought to reduce risks in those avenues. So again, it's very exciting to be here. The best thing about being an ophthalmologist is there's always another problem to solve. So it's never boring because you always know the next year and the next year and the next year is going to bring something else that you need to learn and keep up with.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are really interesting points. So what do you consider to be the biggest challenges facing ophthalmology today?
So I think it depends if you're talking about the medical and science or just the practical day-to-day. I think from a medical and scientific perspective, our biggest unmet need, and I'm going to focus on retina as a retina specialist, is still retinal regeneration, optic nerve regeneration, and we can achieve very good anatomical success in terms of, for example, reattaching a chronic detachment or taking an eye that has trauma and closing a globe. But there's still limits to what we can do if there's permanent, what we call permanent, quote-unquote, damage that damages the optic nerve, the macula, things like that, but impairs vision. One of the great discussions of this meeting was the idea of the eye transplant. You know, this is something that's been talked a lot, right? NYU had this case, the eye transplant, which is really great in a sense because it avoids the use of a prosthesis, and it is a proof of concept that you can tolerate an eye transplant from another patient, but that eye still doesn't see and doesn't function. So there's still sort of the unmet need in discussion was how do you get the science so that you can apply to a patient and give these patients who have the potential to have a functional eyeball, how do you get them vision back that's useful and allows them to enjoy a high quality of life? I think from a practical perspective, at least in the US for ophthalmology, I think one of the biggest challenges facing us is just sort of the dynamics of the job market and the interplay between insurance reimbursements and the financial forces that are entering ophthalmology with private equity and other health organizations. And where do ophthalmologists, and more importantly, where do eye patients fit into this? It's sometimes in some areas getting harder and harder for eye patients with complex issues to find providers who can provide that care because the reimbursement sometimes doesn't match the complexity of the problem, or there are fewer and fewer specialists in a certain subspecialty who are willing to take care of that problem. We're facing a national shortage of pediatric ophthalmologists. We're facing a national shortage in neuro-ophthalmologists. Yeah. And it's no coincidence that those are two fields that are kind of underpaid compared to the complexity of the problem to deal with. So we need to figure out better ways as a group, as ophthalmologists, to advocate for our patients and give them access to those specialists, because it won't do anyone any good in 10 years if we have 5,000 specialists who all know how to inject for age-related macular degeneration, but don't know how to take care of complex problems, don't know how to manage strabismus, don't know how to help a patient with optic neuropathy or optic neuritis. So we do need to figure out ways as a culture in the United States to continue to support those quote-unquote niche areas, whether it's uveitis, oncology, or ophthalmology, pediatric ophthalmology, or even complex retina patients, corneal glaucoma patients, so those patients can still get care. Because right now, if you're a patient with all those problems, in some areas you pick up the phone, you either won't find anyone in a 200-mile radius who can take care of you, or if you do, they may have you wait 4, 5, 6, 7 months for a problem that you really need taken care of sooner.
Those are all great avenues for advocacy, yeah, I agree. So another question that I have is that regarding your experience as a mentee, are there any highlights of your residency and fellowship that you would like to bring up?
I mean, I was very blessed to go through training at a time when I was younger. Everyone's younger when they're in training and a lot of energy. And I was blessed with great mentors. I was at Bascom Palmer for my residency and Wills for my fellowship. I would say the biggest takeaway I would have is, first of all, it's okay not to know everything. You sometimes, I at least know less than most trainees coming in. It's important to be willing to read. I think there's no replacement for reading. There's no replacement for trying to see as many patients as possible. And again, it might sound naive, but I do think if you put the patient first, you'll always find yourself prepared for the next step. Meaning, for example, if you put the patient first and you know you're going to be doing surgery, then you'll read about that surgery and you watch videos on that surgery and you prepare mentally for the surgery. And that will allow you to continue to grow as a physician. My other point about being a mentee is training or residency fellowships when you also may be a mentor at the same time as being a mentee. And I think that transition happens. It's not like one day someone comes to you and hands you a letter and say, now you're a mentor. It happens organically. You'll have a student come to you or a younger resident come to you and ask you a question, ask you a favor, ask you to look at something. And so it is important. I think, again, try to keep it simple, not to sound naive, is try to treat other people the way you would have wanted to be treated. Try to be do unto others as you would have had them do unto you. So if you look at the mentors who you really appreciated coming at that stage, what did they do that made you feel good? And also try to remember how you felt. It's makes you nervous when you're a mentee to go ask someone above you a question. You don't want to sound ignorant. You don't want to ask a dumb question. You don't want to take their time. But just remember that fear when you're on the other side. And to you, it's a 5 minute maybe out of the day, but it's something that's very important to that other person. So try to make it a time where you can give them your full attention, that you can give them that presence of yourself, that you're not occupied with six other things at the same time. And if you know you're going to be busy with six other things, get better at saying, you know what, I know you want to talk about this now. I'm finishing charts from clinic. Hey, why don't we talk on the phone in an hour or two? Let's set a time. Or, hey, let's talk tomorrow. I have a little more time. Because I think we were talking about this earlier. I think in life, it's probably more valuable to give people full time than certainly partial time. And sometimes it's more damaging to give people partial time than to give them no time. I think that if you're a trainee and you're nervous, I can imagine myself being nervous, and I talk to an attending and they seem disinterested or resident, they didn't seem interested or they didn't seem that they were nice, you know, there may be 100 reasons. Maybe they didn't eat lunch that day. Maybe they're busy, they have other things, but you take it very personally because you're so nervous about that encounter. So just try to remember as you move up the totem pole that the person coming from you, there is a power difference. And so if you're gonna be a mentor to a mentee, try to give them the attention that you would have wanted at that stage. And also understand that the feedback is really important to phrase carefully. You know, a lot of times people don't do it everything the perfect way. It's okay to tell them that, but just understand that you need to say it in a way that is constructive and that isn't going to devastate someone or ruin like their ability to pursue a career. I mean, how many times do you talk to other students who say, one of the reasons I loved ophthalmology is because the people were so nice. Yeah. But what does that say about the other fields of medicine? It means that sometimes people weren't that nice to you, right? Or weren't that friendly. And so it'd be great to get to a point in all fields, everyone's nice, ophthalmologists tend to be nice, but just try to be a nice person, try to be available, and then try to be realistic about the time you have so that when you do give people your time, it's your full attention.
Thank you for all the points. You've been a huge pivotal mentor for all the trainees, and we keep learning from you. So my interesting question is that, what team do you have winning in your March Madness bracket this
year? I know less about men's college basketball than I ever had in any part of my life. I think I picked University of North Carolina. As of today, they are already out of the tournament. Okay. We did a bracket at my hospital, all the residents and the doctors, and I am solidly in last place. So I'm doing great in that perspective. But yeah, it's one of my favorite traditions because anyone can participate. And no matter how much you know or how little you know, you could still win. So it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm doing as bad. Okay, thank you for meeting me today. That was really helpful.
No, I enjoyed it. Thank you guys for doing this program. IT is something that has really influenced a lot of people throughout, just not the US, but the world. And I think it's giving people a voice and giving them the confidence to know that, yes, this is something that I can do. And I think it's a wonderful project you guys have.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
If you want more IT-related content, follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Also, find us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. Search for EBYETEA, IT.